The truth shall set you free from bad one-liners. 1-1000. 2-1000. 3-1000. Deep breath. Keep it in. Just breathe. It took every ounce of willpower within me to suppress the urge to scream at the top of my voice. But as God is my witness, I never uttered a word. Instead, if you could have seen the thought bubble above my head, well, let's just say it wasn't one of my most spiritual moments. Yes. Rather than completely freaking out my neighbors who were outside at the time, I bit my tongue, almost off, and set my sights on an orange flower pot and viciously spiked it to the ground like a football. That helped, a little. No, not really. Here I was, a church planter and pastor of a rapidly growing congregation. My wife and I were happily married. We lived in a multiple bedroom house. We had friends and family surrounding us with love and encouragement. Yet I was standing in the backyard, screaming in my head and spiking flower pots with my hands. In case you don't know, here's the deal. We pastors consistently feel the pressure to mask our weaknesses. We don't have the freedom to be ticked off. We must always keep it classy and cheesy with an arsenal of Christian cliches at our disposal. On the outside, we love for you to believe we're walking in the freedom of truth, but on the inside, we know it's fake. Sadly, we're too good at selling the fake. And we're trapped by common lies that we believe all too quickly, or at least I was. One of my neighbors gave me a puzzled look. "Shane, are you all right, brother?" Almost without thinking, I said, "Absolutely. You know me, I'm too blessed to be stressed, my man." I cannot believe I really said that. The truth is, it was a lie. I was broken, confused, and flat out sick and tired of hearing one-liners wrapped in pretty Christian paper, but offering no power to help us and what we're going through as a family. And what were we dealing with? All right, sure, I'll tell you. As a couple, Casey and I always knew we wanted to adopt. It was something we had talked about from the minute we got married. We planned on having biological children first and then starting the adoption process. We had it all figured out, or so we thought. After we had had two daughters, both of us had a picture in our minds of what our son would be like. We envisioned him playing with our girls, excelling in football, and growing healthy and strong. Needless to say, we imagined the blindside version of adoption. However, our creative God had a plan to put to death our shallow view of the picture-perfect family. When we began the process to adopt, our two biological daughters were 6 years and 8 months old. Casey and I had no idea what this journey would entail, but we knew without a doubt that God was calling us to adopt in this particular season of our lives. We started researching agencies, found one, and began praying through the countries the agency worked with. Initially, we decided to pray about it for several days. But that first night, we had a feeling of peace that Uganda was the place we'd find our son. We did all the paperwork and training, and then the real wait started. We were on the waiting list and soon found out it would most likely take much longer than we had ever imagined. So we waited and prayed for the son we knew was there but had never met. Ironically, Casey would often pray that God would bring us a child no one else wanted, a child who needed love and a family, but had little to no hope of either. Still, we both visualized that our son would be big, muscular, and Christmas card photo ready. Casey woke up one morning and discovered an email from someone she knew only through Facebook. The person asked if we were open to adopting a child with special needs. Casey wrote back asking for some clarification. We knew very little about special needs, but enough to understand it was a very, very broad term. Special needs could describe something as small as a missing finger or as big as needing constant in-depth care.